Chico Smoke Shop, where you'll save up to 40% on all products with no city or state sales tax. Over 100 brands to choose inside the store or through the drive-thru. Open 7 days a week, where you'll save up to 40% every day at Chico Smoke Shop.
From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Welcome to the Wildcast podcast. I'm Arizona Daily Star sports editor Ryan Finley, here with Michael Lev. Michael, hello.
Hey, what's up, Ryan?
Not much. Obviously, plenty of football to talk. Tomorrow, you are getting on a plane to go to scenic Houston, Texas for week two.
GH also is going to be on that same flight.
Absolutely.
I learned recently.
Absolutely. No place I'd rather be than Houston in early September. enough about the humidity. Let's talk about a different kind of heat. Kevin Sumlin and the Wildcats are 0-1. This lines up. You don't want to say must-win game because it's non-conference football. But this is certainly a need-to-win game here. If Arizona comes home 0-2, we got problems.
So it wouldn't really have a profound impact on, I don't know, the Pac-12 race, right?
Right.
As you mentioned, not a conference game. No one ever expected Arizona to go to the college football playoff this year. Maybe
right.
The players did, but no one who's kind of realistic about it thought that that was possible.
Right.
But if you're 0-2, you're coming back home for week three against Southern Utah.
There's going to be
8 o'clock.
There's going to be 18,000 people in the stands if you're 0-2 and playing Southern Utah at 8 p.m.
Right. I mean, they're trying to build momentum. I know people like hate that word momentum
right.
in sports, but that's what they're trying to create here as far as fan interest, right? Creating a lively atmosphere at the stadium. And, I mean, it was kind of deflating the other night, the way things turned out. I mean, it was a good crowd.
Right.
Felt like they were really into it. It was, like, cool when the fireworks went off when they scored. But they didn't score very much until the fourth quarter. And they were trailing. And it just, you know, I expected, like, the proverbial fireworks show from Khalil Tate plus Kevin Sumlin plus Noel Mazzoni.
Plus actual fireworks.
Plus actual fireworks. Mm-hmm. And it didn't really happen. So I think this game is important for those reasons beyond
right.
just what their record would be if they lost.
Well, that's one of the things I was telling Justin Spears was when I was on ESPN radio on, what, Tuesday with him. Not to mix my sports metaphors here.
You but always
I,
do that.
But I do, and I always apologize, but I'm not sorry. I mean, this is like opening day of the baseball season. You get blanked 6-0, and you go, oh, God, we got to play another 161 of these. We got to figure it out, right? Arizona started, there was so much hope. Everybody was in the stands, almost a full house, the whole sort of pregame pomp and circumstance. And you come out and, I mean, did the average fan get off his butt to cheer once during that game? I mean, was there one, oh my goodness moment? I'm not sure there was. And if you're trying to draw people back to the stadium for a real game experience, having a game with very few highlights where the team loses is not good.
No, it's not good. And there are going to be changes this week.
Okay.
I mean, Kevin Sumlin didn't spell it out, but he basically spelled it out. You
okay.
know, and everything that he said starting Monday and then in Tuesday's Pac-12 call, I mean, he was saying, look, you know, he didn't say it in so many words, but he basically said, we messed up. We
right.
need to get Khalil Tate more involved with his legs. And I wrote an extensive piece about why that's important, and it's not just the yards that he might produce. It's the attempts, and it's what effect it has on the rest of the offense and the defense. You know, it's kind of like some people who might not know that much about football would say, why do you ever run the ball? Like, when you pass the ball, you can gain way more yards, but you can't pass the ball on every single play unless you're Mike Leach.
Mm-hmm.
Because the defense will just adjust to that. They'll play the pass. You have to keep them honest. To me, if nothing else, Khalil running the occasional sweep or quarterback draw or whatever keeps the defense honest and sets up other stuff.
To me, it's about being multiple. And multiple is not only changing sort of your formations and your play calling. It's changing how you do things. And, you know, last week was, and I think I joked to you about this, Lev, it's how I play Madden. Last week was four wide, throwing deep, hoping for some penalties, maybe a big play here and there. That's not a way to play sort of responsible football. I think Khalil Tate, the big miracle to me last week was that Khalil Tate threw downfield. How many times was it? It was like,
After rewatching the game, I tried to sort of chart the plays that were like bombs, you know, quote unquote. And I counted 11 plays where the ball traveled at least 38 yards in the air.
That he did that without turning the ball over to me is a minor miracle. And that's something that's not going to happen if he does it again against Houston.
But none of those balls were completed.
Right.
Zero out of 11. Three were pass interference penalties. So, you know, you get a first down, you get 15 yards. Mm-hmm. But when Kevin Sumlin talks about efficiency, that's not the way to put together an efficient offense. It's a surprising strategy given their offensive line problems. You'd think they'd want a lot of plays where he's getting the ball out of his hands quickly, not where he's like taking a 5 or 7 step drop and waiting and launching it downfield. You know, there was a little element of hero ball to those passes.
Sure.
And we saw that with Khalil last year too. At times when they would get behind, he would press and he would try to make that, you know, to use a baseball analogy, swing for the fences, right? Try to hit a home run instead of, you know, piecing together a rally with singles and doubles.
Right.
And they started out that way in that game. Mm-hmm. He was 6 for 6. And then from that point forward, he was 11 for 28. And it just was, to me, like way too many low percentage passes.
Right. Let's close the book on that game real quick, because we've said a lot about it, obviously. Heading into game two here, Houston presents a whole different slew of challenges. You've been scouting them kind of informally all week. Outside of Ed Oliver, and Ed Oliver might be the best player in college football, what else can you tell me about Houston?
Yeah, they're an interesting team in the sense that they struggle to beat Rice.
Uh-huh.
Like, I know what the final score was in that game. I think it was 45-27, but Rice was leading 24-17 at halftime. And at the end of the fourth quarter is kind of when Houston started to pull away a little bit. But midway through the third quarter, it was a 3-point game.
Wow.
And we're talking about Rice, which barely beat Prairie View A&M in week one.
As we all know, the nationally televised Rice Prairie View game.
Right.
Yes, yeah.
Right. So, you know, I'm sure that it's going to be a difficult game for Arizona, right? This is a quality opponent, but is it a team that they can't beat? I don't think so. We are talking about an AAC team here. They do have, you know, possibly the number one pick in the draft in Ed Oliver. They have a different offense than what we saw last year. If you remember, Kyle Allen was the quarterback for Houston last year. Mm-hmm. So here's the small world of college football. Kyle Allen, of course, played for
Kevin Sumlin
before transferring to Houston. Kyle Allen, I don't know. I hate to use the word overrated to describe anyone who's like a non-professional, but he was a 5-star prospect who never really lived up to his billing. And I think in De'Eric King, you're going to see a much more athletic quarterback, not on the level of Khalil Tate, but this is a guy who I'm pretty sure played some receiver for them last year, and also was a pretty good rusher as well. And it's going to be an up-tempo spread type of attack. They ended up with 257 yards rushing last week and 320 yards passing. So a good balance. They're going to take more strikes down the field. That was something that Kevin Sumlin talked about earlier in the week. In that game against Rice, they were only in the red zone 3 times the entire game, and they still scored 45 points. So a lot of more
big
play capability, whereas BYU, totally different offense.
Right.
I mean, you saw 2 tight ends. You saw I formation, which you hardly ever see anymore in college football or the NFL. You saw basically kind of 3 plays. They'd run up the middle.
Yep.
They'd run the jet sweep.
Yep.
Or they'd do play action and throw into the flats.
Right.
And those flats were wide open for them all game, which is sort of inexplicable.
Right.
We asked one of the players about it this week, and he said it's because we were playing zone, we were playing back, which doesn't make a ton of sense because that wasn't like a downfield quick strike type of offense.
Right. You should be there. Yeah, you should be there if you're playing zone.
Yeah, you would think. Someone also said that, you know, when Tristan Cooper got hurt early in the third quarter, they put David Coleman, the freshman, in there for a while, and he was kind of struggling with his assignments, and things stabilized a little bit with Xavier Bell. Might be a new safety in the mix this week.
Nice.
For the Wildcats.
Yeah.
Ryan, familiar name.
Go.
Scotty Young.
Scotty Young back, suspension lifted.
Somebody, I think he's going to start.
Really?
I don't know exactly where he's going to start, but I think he's going to start. He's too good to not play.
Well, and that's exactly it. And you know, Scotty Young is a guy who I think was a real rising star of theirs last year before he kind of got hit with two issues. You know, there's that domestic violence arrest and the fallout from that. And then it seemed kind of like, you know, Rich Rod sort of put his neck on the line for Scotty Young, and then worst possible timing, knee injury? Was it a knee injury?
He did have a knee injury, yes. A
knee injury that limited him pretty much until the end of the season.
Yeah, he came back. He was fine at the end of the year, but in the kind of the late middle, he was hampered.
Right, but he's a guy who, at least you know, at this time a year ago, everybody was talking about, right? As we were talking about the Youngs. We're talking about Troy Young and Scotty Young. And this is a defense, I think, that is still so thin that you can't afford to sit a guy with Scotty Young's ability, even if somebody's got to play out of position.
I'm not a news reporter like Caitlin, you know. Mm-hmm. So, you know, take this statement with a grain of salt, but he's basically served his punishment from a football standpoint, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he sat out all of spring practice. He missed all of training camp. He missed the first game. So he's back now.
Right.
Right. And he's sort of starting with a clean slate, I feel like, with this coaching staff.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously has to stay on the straight and narrow. But as you mentioned, he was a really good player for them early last year. And if he hadn't had these, you know, off the field problems plus getting hurt, he might have gotten some freshman All-America recognition as well. They're also supposedly, hopefully, going to get Jace Whitaker back.
Mm-hmm.
And that would help, number one, if a team is going to be throwing the ball more and throwing it down the field. But number two, Jace to me is he's the leader of that defense.
Right.
I know that Colin Schooler is the middle linebacker. He's the quarterback, whatever. He's still sophomore. He's still young. Jace is a senior. He's been through it all. He's just a tough guy. He's a gritty guy. You know, I remember that Purdue game last year, the Foster Farms Bowl. I mean, he had a terrible start to that game, like the worst I've ever seen. But he rallied and played really well from that point on, and he just has that kind of mental toughness that I feel like was missing a little bit last week.
Can I ask, and at some point here on the podcast, we will get some sort of drop or jingle for a new segment I'd like to work in, which is hacky journalism question for Michael Lev. Hacky journalism question for Michael Lev. Here we go. Hacky journalism question for you.
Yes.
Who's more motivated? Houston, because Kevin Sumlin's coming to town, or Kevin Sumlin because he used to coach at Houston? Discuss.
I would say Kevin Sumlin is more motivated, but I don't think it has much to do with his return to Houston.
Okay.
I think it's more, we need to win.
Right.
You know, like I can't start 0-2 here for all those reasons that we talked about at the top of the podcast. You know, the Houston return, it's certainly going to be something that's talked about on the broadcast a little bit and something that we'll probably write about a little bit. But he's really downplayed it. You know, he's like, I've done this sort of thing before. Like, I played at Purdue and coached at Minnesota. And then I coached at Purdue and coached at Minnesota. And then I, you know, Texas A&M and Oklahoma, they played each other. And I was on both of those staffs. So for him, I mean, it'll probably be a little bit emotional going back there. When he first comes out, it'll probably be booed, I would guess. Because I think, you know, people were pretty unhappy when he left because he had taken them to great heights and then took a better job. And, you know how it is when that happens.
Right. How dare he take three times the money to go to a much, much better football program.
Right. Right. And, you know, the Houston players, I don't think any of them would have played for Kevin Sumlin.
They would have been like 12 when Kevin Sumlin did this.
Right. Yeah. Doing the math here in my head. That was like, you know, 7 years ago.
Right.
I'm sure some of them were recruited by him at Texas A&M. I know Ed Oliver was.
Mm-hmm.
I think everyone tried to get Ed Oliver, at Texas A&M included. So, you know, there will be some familiarity there.
Right.
But from the motivational angle, I think Arizona has the edge there because they're desperate. Let's face it.
Right. When I covered Arizona football, the end of the Mike Stoops era, he was always talking about urgency. Immediacy. You know those words? It's like program when we talk about the football program, but in football it's program. There's a lot of talk about suddenness and immediacy and urgency, desperation. I think picking this week's game may come down to who's more desperate, and Arizona's certainly desperate. They cannot afford to come home 0-2. After spending 10 months saying, I mean, just talk about the money for a minute. Let me ramble about the money.
Go for it.
You fire a coach because you don't want to have to pay his retention bonus in March, among other reasons, right?
Okay.
Okay. You replace him with a staff that costs X amount more than the previous staff. Okay?
Okay.
Okay. You spend all summer marketing that this isn't your grandpa's Arizona Wildcats.
Kevin. New era.
It's a new era. You know who coined the term new era? Wasn't us. Wasn't anybody in the media. It was their own marketing department. They say, come on out. It's a new era of Arizona football. Basically saying, punt on your expectations, right? Your expectations will be raised. And then they come out and it's kind of the same old thing. In fact, not only is it more of the same, I'm not sure Rich Rodriguez, if coaching this team last Saturday, would have lost the game. Because Khalil Tate would have run, right? And how many non-conference games did Rich Rod lose?
Not many.
Like three. So to me, from a perception and a marketing standpoint, you cannot afford to come home 0-2. Yeah, you can't afford to come home 0-2. And to me, that's the real issue.
So let's say that happened. Is the season salvageable?
Yeah, of course it is. Because it's just, heck, you'd go perfect in non-conference play, playing a Rose Bowl. Or in conference play and playing a Rose Bowl. It's salvageable, but it's just not going to look good. It's going to look like last year, right? Like last year was, Arizona had a Heisman Trophy candidate in Khalil Tate. Arizona was steamrolling people and couldn't put butts in the seats.
You know what's a fun fact? Maybe not really a fun fact, but just a fact. That they have a 4-game losing streak.
That's
they haven't
crazy.
Won a game in a while.
Yeah.
And in all of those games, you know, Khalil Tate really wasn't able to get going running the ball.
Right.
And I examined that in that story that I referenced earlier. And I think they easily could have won two of those games.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they absolutely should have run away with the game against ASU. And they easily could have won the Foster Farms Bowl. Let me ask you something.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan,
yes.
What's the common theme between the ending of the Foster Farms Bowl and the ending of the BYU game?
Ooh, can't get off the field. The defense can't get off the field.
Exactly. Defensive right. stops, right? That
right.
needed to be made and couldn't be made. I actually watched the ending of that Foster Farms Bowl again
mm-hmm.
recently.
Mm-hmm.
The plays that preceded the winning touchdown, if you remember, Trevor Wood?
Yes.
The big tight end. He started at defensive end in that game, remember? Because they
yep.
had so many injuries.
I remember that, sure.
And he had a ball that he could have intercepted. He dropped into coverage, and it was like a hard throw, and he jumped up, and it went off his fingertips.
Well, it wasn't like he played 3 years at tight end
right.
before that day.
Right. I mean, a difficult yeah. play, but a play he could have made. Would have been game over.
Right.
And then there was another play where the quarterback, like, stumbled,
mm-hmm.
like, while dropping back, and easily could have been sacked, and I think threw the ball away or completed a short pass to the sideline. So the defense couldn't get the stops. And then again, this other game against BYU, the defense could not get the stops that they needed to get. I mean, I know everyone was talking about, you know, Khalil Tate not running the ball and right. all that stuff. But as I mentioned in our video after the game, I was more disappointed in the defense because I had higher expectations for them.
Right.
I'm hearing players say stuff like, oh, it was the first game, you know, stuff happens. You know, they're all the most mistakes you're going to make are in the first game, et cetera, et cetera. But you know what? I don't find that to be a legit excuse when you have the same defensive coordinator for a third year in a row.
Same scheme.
And eight yeah. or nine starters returning
right.
from the previous year, you know, or from at least guys who have started for Marcel.
Right.
There shouldn't have been that many more mistakes. And what it comes down to at the end of the day is that, you know, BYU is more physical.
Right.
Like, is Houston's not going to play the same style.
Right.
But they're going to play tempo.
Mm-hmm.
It is going to be really hot and humid. It's, you know, it's a day game. This is going to be a real test for that Arizona defense, whether they have Scotty Young Jr. back or Jace Whitaker back.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to me, the front has got to hold up. Or else they're going to be chasing again, which is kind of what ended up happening in the second half of the game last week.
Wow. Who would have thought, by the way? I mean, we would be talking about sort of a win or else football game in week two of the season. That's it's interesting. And certainly I think that there is now a sense of urgency to get it right.
When you looked at the schedule, I think a lot of people just casually would glanced at it and said, oh, they're going to be 4-0. They're going to be 4-0 heading into that USC game.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't beat Houston, I mean, you're looking at the prospect of them being 2-2 at best. And I mean, of course, you know, I'm sure they would beat Southern Utah, which is an FCS team at home. Then at Oregon State, which, I mean, we all think they're the worst team in the Pac-12, but gosh, who knows? When you go to the Pacific Northwest and you're Arizona, there are no guarantees.
Right. No easy wins.
Right. So important game record-wise, important game, like you said, marketing and enthusiasm-wise. And then just also you want to see them look like things fit better together on offense. You know, you talked about being multiple, which is also like a great like coaching word.
Right.
I love it when coaches say, oh, we're going to be multiple. But they need to be more diversified, right? It can't just be run up the middle and throw the ball 50 yards downfield. There has to be more of the intermediate game. Shun Brown needs to get more than one touch, which is something that Kevin Sumlin brought up on his own on Monday, which he seemed like surprised that that was the case. The tight ends were not involved
at
in the
all.
Offense very much at all. So we need to see like the full buffet here.
Right. Right.
If down this, in Houston.
Right. If this is the new era, it needs to stop feeling like the same old thing.
Yeah. And I think we're going to see more Tate running, whether that's by design or just him running for his life.
Right.
You know, the problem I see in this game and the thing I can't get past, I want to pick Arizona to win because of all those reasons that we just stated, the desperation, the motivation, all of that stuff. But man, Ed Oliver, in the, right in the middle of that line, as Coach Sumlin said, it's not like, let's say there's a great cornerback, right? You
just
throw to
the
other side of the field, right? Ed Oliver plays right over the center. So he is right in the middle of the action on every single play. And he totally blew up the game last year against a better offensive line than what they have now.
Right. Well, lots of screen plays. Maybe.
they hey, it was weird last week seeing them run like three or four screen passes because I don't think I had seen one single screen pass in the previous two-plus seasons.
Right. Break out that Mike Leach formation. Did you see that, the Mike Leach stuff from last Saturday?
I did, yes.
The play. I think they called it Big Gulp after his friend.
Yeah, we were talking about it. You know, for those who haven't seen it, like he had the center and another player split off to the side, but then he'd snap it like kind of diagonally across the field. Like it's a cool looking play, but like, is the risk like worth the reward? Like you have to make a very precise snap on that play. I have no idea whether we're going to see that again, but I think Arizona fans would definitely like to see a little bit more creativity from their offense than what we saw in week one.
Absolutely. Well, that'll do it for this episode of The Wildcast. Michael Lev, thank you for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Ryan.
Absolutely. Arizona-Houston, Saturday, 9 a.m. on ABC. If you are in Tucson or in the West, if you are east of, say, St. Louis, that game will be on ESPN2. And then, Michael, let's check in next week as the Wildcats prepare for the Southern Utah somethings.
It's a bird of
some sort.
It's a
bird.
We'll get it down by next week.
Absolutely. Thanks for joining us.
Chico's Smoke Shop, where you'll save up to 40% on all products with no city or state sales tax. Over 100 brands to choose inside the store or through the drive-thru. Open 7 days a week, where you'll save up to 40% every day at Chico's Smoke Shop.